Welcome to Queensland Economy Watch Special Coronavirus Edition. I'm your host, Gene Tunney. Joining me today on the line is my good friend and former Treasury colleague, Joe Brannigan. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Gene. Good to be here.
Absolutely. Joe, I'm keen to chat with you about coronavirus because so much has been happening in the last few days. It's just extraordinary. We've never seen anything like this in our lifetimes. I'd like to chat with you about what this all means for the Australian economy, and I want to chat about the stimulus package we had last week, the various measures we've seen announced, so the shutting down of major events, the effective closure of our borders, as Scott Morrison acknowledged this morning with the two-week self-isolation period, states of emergency of Victoria and ACT, the NRL possibly having to suspend. I mean, what more can go wrong? Could we first? Could we first start, Joe, with your thoughts on what this means for the Australian economy and the Queensland economy, please, based on what we know today?
Well, I think, Gene, the first thing to say is that this is unprecedented in at least in our lifetimes. You'd really have to go back to wartime, I think, to see such a major social and cultural disruption. Particularly, you know, if we look forward over the next few months, and of course the associated economic impact is, put your adverb in there. You know, it will be massive. We've had a significant international trade shock, which I guess is the first economic channel coming into Australia from the reduction in tourism from China and the disruption to the education sector, which is ongoing. Then we've had a significant domestic shock in relation to, people staying at home, people panic buying, there being shortages of goods, people cutting down on the services they're seeking because, as we go forward, people are trying to maintain social isolation. So I think there's no doubt that even with a significant expansion in the health sector over the next 6 months, overall, the economic impact will be quite significant for Australia, and possibly even more significant in Queensland because of the reliance on the tourism sector more than other states. It's uncharted territory, and we really don't yet have a handle, I think, on the overall economic impact. But I think there's no doubt that the June quarter, the last quarter of 2019-20, will be very difficult for the Australian economy.
Absolutely. We're still in the March quarter, and so we've already seen, you know, substantial impacts in my view, or we expect in the next couple of weeks to have even more substantial impacts. Could the March quarter even have a negative result in it?
It's possible. I mean, Federal Treasury have estimated a 0.5% impact. If growth is only 2% a year, that's 0.5% a quarter. And of the, I think it's 10.950 billion dollars in stimulus that the Treasury will try to get out the door in 2019-20, most of that, I think, will land in the June quarter. So it's absolutely possible that the March quarter will be negative. And even the June quarter, even with that amount of stimulus, I've done a very rough and ready calculation where I've assumed in the June quarter a 20% decline in four industries: wholesale trade, retail trade, accommodation, cafes, and transport. That subtract 21.8 billion out of the economy. This is on the production side of the economy. Even if you assume a 20% expansion in healthcare and social assistance, that only gets you 7.3 billion. So, you know, you'd need that stimulus package to work to make up the difference, to make up the gap of 14.5 billion. And even then, you know, you're still short. I mean, there may be more fiscal stimulus in the May budget. I'm sure there will be, but it's looking like the June quarter will be negative to me. I mean, this is the problem. Is it doesn't matter how much you do on the supply side. If people are at home and not spending, then you know the economy is not operating.
Sure. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. That's a sort of back of the envelope calculation I've been trying to do myself, and that sounds fairly reasonable to me, given that, you know, big chunks of the economy could shut down if we have to shut down cafes and restaurants, or they won't open if you know, people can't go to work because they're sick. We could certainly see impacts like that. So are we talking about 0.5%, 1% GDP decline? Is that roughly what you're getting? I found it a bit hard to keep track of all those numbers. Sorry, Joe.
Sure. Without the stimulus, you're looking at something like a 3% contraction in the June quarter. With the stimulus, which is about 2% of GDP just in that June quarter, you're back to around about a minus one. Now, you know, is this worst case? Are these reasonable assumptions? We just don't know. I mean, my thinking on the March quarter is that you may well have had a spike in retail trade with hoarding and stockpiling. You've of course got to counterbalance that with a severe reduction in people's discretionary spending over the next 2 weeks before, as you say, we haven't hit the end of the March quarter yet. So, you know, given that that hoarding and stockpiling might not be enough to get us over the line in the March quarter. So I think that, you know, we just don't know, especially how these next 2 weeks are going to play out. But certainly I think the June quarter, unless there's a massive stimulus in the budget that, you know, that people actually use and spend, it's looking like a negative quarter to me.
Yep. I think that's for sure. Just on the impacts on retail, I agree with you. Look, there are a couple of different things going on there. So we've got all of the stockpiling. I mean, it's just been extraordinary to see the shelves stripped of, what, toilet paper and pasta and bags of rice.
And sanitizer.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, so there's been that boost to Coles and Woolies. But there'll be a drop-off in spending by visitors, so the retail sector or the broader retail sector, the specialty stores and the stores in tourism regions such as Gold Coast and Cairns, that they must be suffering due to this. So we'll just need to see how it all adds up. I mean, we've got things going in opposite directions, but generally I think you make some great points there, Joe. Joe, could we turn to that stimulus package? You've mentioned, yes. Look, it seems quite sizable. What are your thoughts on the makeup of the stimulus package, the composition, the different elements of it? Are there things you liked? Are there things you didn't like? And also, what are the prospects of another stimulus package in the 2021 budget, which the Treasury will be currently preparing?
Well, I think the overall comment I'd make is that we've certainly learnt some lessons since the GFC response. You know, thinking back to those GFC packages, in hindsight, they look like major overreactions. You know, you might remember the money for new programs that kind of had to be designed on the run. I think the total package might have been at least $50 billion. The second package was, I think, $42 billion, and the first one might have been around $10 billion. But the problem was those programs weren't shovel ready, or much of the spending, particularly the infrastructure spending, wasn't shovel ready. And there were also criticisms about the cash handouts, with people spending it, you know, on brand new TVs that are imported, so it has limited stimulatory effect through the economy. And I think, you know, there's been some careful analysis after the GFC showing that really what saved Australia from recession was the Reserve Bank rapidly cutting interest rates and our exchange rate depreciating, because it's a floating exchange rate. So I think Treasury have certainly learnt some of those lessons, and it was good to see that they released their 7 or 8 fiscal principles before they actually released their fiscal response. And those principles are really sound public policy principles, things that microeconomists look at. You know, the efficiency of the spending. You know, will this spending, whether it's infrastructure spending, or, you know, raise GDP per capita, or will it lower GDP per capita in the long run? In other words, what's its effect on productivity? So I think, given the political limits to this response, and what I mean by that is, you know, politicians are hell-bent on avoiding recessions, you know, which is fair enough, because there are, you know, long-run costs if we do go into recession, and, you know, particularly in terms of job losses and you know, and getting the economy back on track. But you know, given those limits, I was particularly pleased with the fiscal package, that it had that kind of microeconomic or really sound public policy feel to it. So, you know, a lot of the response was targeted to businesses and business cash flow, such as increasing the instant asset write-off, the cash payments to businesses to cover cash flow to keep employing people, and the wage subsidies for apprentices. And we know, you know, that there's a problem, particularly with apprentices. If we choose as a society to have a relatively high minimum wage, then it's difficult to employ people don't have much experience, that don't have many skills yet. So I think those subsidies keep young people training and keep them developing, and, you know, they'll get into the labour market and get more skilled. So, you know, overall, you know, I'd give it a B, I guess. I think Rudd's package, you know, might have been about a D. So, you know, I think we've definitely improved. And the other thing to say is the significant turnaround we've had in the fiscal balance that has allowed us to loosen the strings again. So the peak fiscal balance in 2009-10, and what I mean by that is the deficit that measured broadly, or what I would say correctly, looking at the fiscal balance in the non-financial public sector, was almost minus 7% of GDP in 2009-10. And over the last 10 years, the consolidated fiscal balance, that is in the Commonwealth and all the states, has improved by almost 5% of GDP, about 4.7% of GDP. So in other words, in nominal terms, we've gone from almost a negative $90 billion consolidated fiscal balance, which is basically your operating balance, but including your infrastructure spending. So it gives you an idea of how much you need to borrow each year. We've gone from minus about $90 billion to minus about $34 billion, I think. So that's in nominal terms. So it's a significant improvement that has allowed the Commonwealth and some of the states to loosen the fiscal purse strings again going forward.
Absolutely. A couple of things there I want to pick up on, Joe. You mentioned that it looks like there have been some lessons that have been absorbed from the last crisis. I recall having been in the Treasury during the last crisis, and having had a little bit to do with that that $42 billion nation building and jobs package. I remember Stephen Kennedy, current Treasury Secretary, at the time was working as an economic advisor to Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. So it's possible that Stephen has absorbed some of the lessons from that period, and he's made sure that we've got those lessons have been, have been adopted in the development of this stimulus package. So, really great comments there. Now,
but nevertheless, I mean, just to round that out, I guess one final thing is nevertheless, even though, I guess Stephen Kennedy, he was trained, I guess, by Ken Henry, who famously said, go hard, go early, go households, and even Martin Parkinson in an interview last week said we should be aiming for a 1% of GDP stimulus. So even though the lessons have been learned, I guess the criticism I still have is it's a very macro view. It's a very kind of, Keynesian, like, okay, the coronavirus will contract GDP by 1%. Therefore, we need to borrow from ourselves in the future to cover that so that we don't go into recession. And that's a very Treasury Reserve Bank view. And I think that if the government sought out the views of microeconomists, people from the Productivity Commission, if they were to seek out the view of a Gary Banks, for example, who the former chairman of the Productivity Commission, I think the advice would be different. I think it would be more focused on from a ground-up view of the economy, where we're trying to say, okay, well, where will the economy be operating less efficiently than it could, and where should we target, our response? And the responses may be more regulatory, or we do kind of changes to regulation as well as the fiscal policy stimulus. That's not saying that people from that side of economics are opposed to fiscal stimulus. It's just that, I guess it's a more nuanced approach where you really are focusing on the efficiency of the economy and roadblocks to efficiency and trying to make everything work a little bit more efficiently, which will stimulate productivity and growth down the track.
Sure. Great point, Joe. It would be good to be able to bring more people into the into that group that is formulating stimulus policies, and people with that microeconomic perspective. Totally agree with you on that. I'd just like to ask now about the National Cabinet that has been convened.
Yeah.
So this idea of having the Prime Minister and I guess some other federal ministers or the Treasurer perhaps, and then the heads of the state and territory governments. What do you think of that as an idea?
The coronavirus knows no boundaries. To a certain extent, we're flying by the seat of our pants. So I think that, any coordinated, planning and response mechanism like a national cabinet would help here. I mean, if you go back to that idea, you might remember the idea of cooperative federalism versus competitive federalism. And you remember we had that seamless national economy under the Rudd government. And, in some areas, you want to have that cooperative federalism. You want to have similar rules and regulations across states and similar policies, which help the economy. On the other hand, one of the great advantages of our federal system is that states can go off and do things by themselves for their own particular reasons. They have their own unique circumstances, and they almost act as experiments. I know, for example, that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but in Queensland at the moment, we're still in containment. We're still in the containment phase. So if you have coronavirus, you need to go to hospital for 14 days, where I think is in other states you go home. So, I think those having different approaches is not a bad thing in in order to find what the best approach is. And, you know, one size doesn't fit all. You know, different approaches will be required whether you're in a highly dense capital city or you're in a regional area. So I guess, you know, to the extent that we need that national coordination, of course, the national cabinet's a good idea. It also focuses the mind of the Australian public. It tells them that this is serious. You have one spokesman in the Prime Minister. At the moment, they're meeting three times a week. So I guess it means that you get better communication and more clear information flow. But let's hope it doesn't restrict the states in needing to, you know, to do what they need to do to respond to their own particular circumstances.
Yep. Joe, I'd like to talk about the public health response now. Now, neither of us is a epidemiologist or an expert on public health. We'll just have to acknowledge that. So these are some of these comments could be considered gratuitous to an extent. And I remember I was listening to the Planet Money podcast last week, and they had Austin Goolsbee, former chair of the Council of Economic Advisers under President Obama, on, and he said that the best thing you can do for the economy has nothing to do with the economy. And he's talking about you've got to get this under control. So what we've seen, or what I think I'm seeing is that the private sector seems to be very conscious of the risks that coronavirus is posing to the economy. And so I'm working from home, and I've got my office at Spring Hill, but I'm not there. I've said my research assistant Ben can work from home. You and your business, Tulipwood Economics, you're working from home. We've got the
Working from home.
Yep. And we've got the NRL. It's made an announcement that it's going to be, I think it's playing games without spectators from round two. And then they would consider suspending the season if even a ball boy contracted coronavirus. Now, at the moment, we're having this big debate about whether we need more extreme measures. And to its credit, the government has adopted some fairly tough measures already. I mean, this requirement, you self-isolate for 14 days after you arrive back in Australia, that's just going to devastate tourism. And, you know, it is a really harsh requirement. But there's this view that we should be shutting the schools down. Do you have any thoughts on that, Joe? Should we be taking even stronger measures now to prevent more infections and this thing getting out of control and having a greater cost to public health and the economy later on?
Well, as you say, Jim, neither of us are epidemiologists or pandemic experts, but my feeling is that shutting the schools down would be a very, very extreme measure. My first reaction when that was suggested is that, well, who looks after kids when kids are home sick when both parents are working? And of course it's grandma, grandpa. So that, you know, and they're elderly, and this could actually spread the virus even faster. And then, you know, other points that have been made are that, you know, what the healthcare workers do when their kids are at home. They can't be, you know, if the healthcare system is under maximum load and it's all hands on deck, then having kids at home will actually, negatively impact on the availability of health workers. So while I agree, and I guess everyone's on board with this famous chart now that you know, various leaders and chief medical officers have been showing us where, you know, we need to flatten and push that curve out to the right because there's a ceiling in terms of the, you know, the number of available beds and resources in hospital. I just think that shutting schools down, I agree that it may be counterproductive. I think that shouldn't stop individual states, you know, going back to that kind of federalism point, it shouldn't stop individual states or even individual regions making their own decisions when the number of cases are rising or approaching the peak, you know, possibly in May, mid to late May. So I've got very little doubt that schools will eventually close. I thought that they may be closed for term two, or they may extend the Easter break and just see what happens. It seems like in Queensland now, even the Prime Minister won't make a decision on schools until next Friday, or a coordinated decision, that, you know, I think there's only 2 or 3 weeks to go in the school term. So it may be that we make it to the Easter holidays, and then there may be an announcement that there's a longer Easter break. It's really hard to tell, but I think that things are moving so quickly in the last few days. Like my feeling was that we wouldn't have these extreme social measures until May, and, you know, we wouldn't peak until May, June, July, and it would get mixed up with the flu season, and then, you know, we'd be, you know, there'd be that's when you'd see the maximum kind of social, economic, health and cultural negative impacts. But it seems like things are moving very quickly because the government's decided to really push this curve down and push it out as far as possible. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Prime Minister, maybe pressure from parents, pressure from state premiers, makes a decision to close schools after the Easter holidays, at least temporarily.
Absolutely. So the PM is coming under a lot of pressure on this issue. Carl Stefanovic on Today program was asking him, well, why aren't we shutting the schools given the risks? And the PM said, well, you're not a doctor, Carl, so put him in his place. So I thought that was a good point. I mean, you do need to listen to my own view is we should be taking these measures, but at the same time I recognise that the Prime Minister is getting advice from the best experts that we have on public health.
Well, this is another interesting angle, Gene, is that, you know, should you be taking the advice of medical experts, or should politicians instead be taking that advice on board but then balancing that against economic and, you know, and social issues? So in other words, the framework of the medical profession seems to be to absolutely minimise risks without having too much, detailed analysis about the cost. So the Prime Minister needs to balance the medical advice about, you know, pushing that peak down, delaying it, against the economic advice on the economic cost. Of course, an epidemiologist is not an economist. An economist is not an epidemiologist. So it seems to me that, you know, when the Prime Minister or State Premier say, well, we're just following medical advice, I'm not sure that they should be also following other advice from other experts, because this is a complex problem that affects our society, our economy, and if it goes on long enough, it will affect us culturally. It will change us culturally, how we interact with each other and how we go about our lives and what we buy. And so, you know, I think that the Prime Minister needs to keep in mind in the National Cabinet that remember that you know, the goal of the health sector is to minimise, mortality and illness. The broader goal, as harsh as this might sound, is to balance a lot of other things in that decision-making process. So I think, you know, back to schools, I think at the moment the Prime Minister's made the right call.
Okay. Before I ask the last question, Joe, could you please just tell us where we can find more about you on the internet, please?
Oh, you can find me at tulipwoodeconomics.com.au.
Excellent. Okay. Now, my last question, you've partly answered this already. I was going to ask you, what will Australia look like after we get through this? So will we have the same scale? Will we have the same size tourism industry, international education industry? Will we be going to events, to mass sporting events, as much as we once did? Have you had any preliminary thoughts on what Australia and what the Australian economy could look like once we get through this?
It, it's very difficult to speculate now, Gene, but I think the longer this goes on, and that may depend on how bad the flu season is this year and, you know how soon another pandemic comes. People say it's a 1 in 100 year event. But surely if this goes on for months and months and months, there will be some kind of permanent impact. Whether that means that people, you know, slightly on the margin are storing more food, perhaps there's a positive effect of people maintaining better hygiene habits, kids learning, very important lessons when they're young. Maybe there's some reluctance, particularly over the next few months and year to, you know, to go to major events, to go to concerts, to go to sporting events. I mean, people still need to mix culturally. It's fundamental to our nature to, you know, to go out and have a good time and mix with other people. So it's hard to see it having a profound permanent effect, but I think, surely on the margin and particularly in the short term, it will have some kind of effect on what people, how people live their lives, how people plan for the future, and particularly what they do, going into next winter. Maybe you get higher vaccination rates for the flu. Maybe you get, kids getting pulled out of school more readily when they're sick. I'm not sure, but I guess we'll see. I mean, at the moment, it's just one day at a time. When you have a national cabinet meeting 3 days a week, things move very quickly, don't they?
Absolutely. We've got to take this one day at a time. Joe Brannigan, Director of Tulipwood Economics, thanks so much for your insights today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Well, I found it informative. It's hard to enjoy when we're talking about a serious public health crisis, yes, as this is. But really, again, thanks so much for your time. And let's just hope this doesn't spread too far and no more people lose their lives or suffer from this virus that is starting to spread throughout Australia. So thanks again.
My pleasure, Jim.